Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator, and I'm so glad you've joined me here for episode number 537. I'll be sharing with you a conversation I had with Krista St. Germain. She is a life coach, a post-traumatic growth and grief expert, a widow mom, and the host of the Widowed Mom podcast. And we're going to be talking all about the grief experience for women who are widows while they are raising children. And I think you'll find this a very helpful conversation on the one hand, but also very heartfelt. Before we get there, I just wanted to thank everyone who's been making donations on my Patreon page through Buy Me a Coffee or PayPal. I really appreciate your support. And some of you have been doing that for several years now, and it makes all the difference. I have resisted running advertising on this podcast because I really dislike it as a podcast listener myself. So I've chosen not to run ads, but I did want to say I am open to the idea of sponsorship for the podcast. If someone out there has a business or a company and they're looking for something to sponsor, it would have to be aligned with the mission of improving end-of-life care. But I'm open to receiving any queries about that. So if you know anyone who might like to be a sponsor for this podcast, let me know. And thanks in advance if you choose to do that. And I'll just remind you, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and you'll find three different ways there you can make a contribution, which helps keep the podcast and also the YouTube channel on the air. And so don't forget about the YouTube channel. If you like watching videos, you'll be able to see my conversation with Krista posted on YouTube and with many of the other guests I've had over the last few years. And I'll also, I guess I might as well also remind you, I have a second podcast called What Really Matters, Everyday Spirituality. And it's also available on podcast platforms, and I have a link to it on the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com. So check that out as well. So we'll move on now with my conversation with Krista St. Germain, and I'll come back afterwards for a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to welcome my special guest, Krista St. Germain. Krista is a master certified life coach, post-traumatic growth and grief expert, widow mom, and host of the Widowed Mom podcast. She coaches and teaches other widows so they can love life again. Krista has been featured online and in print in Psychology Today, Medium, Thrive Global, Bustle, Psych Central, and Parents Magazine, and on select podcasts now, including End of Life University. And you can learn more about Krista's work at her website, coachingwithkrista.com, and Krista is spelled K-R-I. I-S-T-A. So Krista, welcome and thanks for joining me here.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always excited to talk about grief.
Yeah, when I heard about your work, I was really excited to have you come on because I haven't talked about this topic of a widowed mothers and mm-hmm. the challenge of carrying on as a mother and raising your children while you're in the midst of grieving. So I was really happy to be able to talk with you about that. But I thought maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit more about your story.
Yeah. I wish I had known a widowed mother earlier on in my own experience. So yeah, I'm glad that other people can have that chance. So basically, I got into this work after going through the school of hard knocks myself. So I had recently turned 40 and I had divorced from my first husband. Marriage did not end well, as many don't. Second husband was kind of, you know, proof that true love can be what you want it to be. And it just felt like everything was on a great high in my life. And we had come back from a trip that we were on. We drove separately. I had a flat tire, pulled over on the side of the highway. We were very close to being home. He wanted to change the tire instead of calling AAA. And so he was trying to get access to my spare tire. We were very safely pulled over on the side of the interstate, or so we thought. And a car that we later found out the driver had meth in his system and alcohol in his system just did not see our hazard lights at all and crashed right into the back of his car. And so within 24 hours, what felt like the best days of my life being ahead of me felt like they just got ripped right out from under me. So didn't see it coming, wasn't planned for it. And what I really realized very quickly was that even though I loved my therapist, she had helped me through my divorce and I had seen her for a number of years. What I thought I knew about grief wasn't very accurate and wasn't helpful. And I pretty quickly realized that I needed some other information because I was using kind of some outdated theories and just I didn't have the right tools. And so fast forward quite a bit, when I got to a better place, I decided this is something I would like to help people with. I think we can have an easier experience of grief than the one that a lot of us are having. And so I decided to quit my job and became a coach. And that's what I've been doing for 8 years now.
And that's interesting. I had a similar experience with a psychologist I'd seen a few times prior to my grief experience. And it was really clear to me, she didn't really understand grief. I think she'd studied it in a book, but had not lived it. And that makes all the difference. You can't lead someone where you haven't been before, and you can't truly understand the grief experience if you haven't been through it.
Yeah. And it's for me, it wasn't so much that she was lacking anything. It's that I realized that everything I came to the experience with was outdated or unhelpful. She was actually quite lovely. And also what I realized is that talking to a point only got me so far, and there were other things that I needed. So I still adore her and appreciate her. But yeah, if we can get ourselves around people who understand grief and that's what they do, you know, on a regular basis, then it's usually better for us.
Well, in my experience, going through the grieving process was particularly hard being a mom with children at home, because those felt like two opposite things that I couldn't possibly hold at the same time. And I had to keep compartmentalizing my grief experience while trying to be there and show up for my children. And I was wondering what that was like for you.
Yeah, a lot of similarities, right? So worried about what their experience is like. You feel like your own world exploded, and then you don't really know how to help yourself. And also you feel this tremendous responsibility to help them and guide them, but you kind of don't know how to do that because you don't even really know how to do it for yourself. And usually in parenting, you feel at least you're a couple of steps ahead of them. You may not perceive that you have all the answers, but you kind of feel like you're a little ahead. And I think something like this, it's very normal too. It just rocks your world. And you don't, or at least I didn't, and many of my clients don't, they don't anticipate the physical impacts of what grief can do. I did not expect the grief fog. I didn't expect to have trouble, you know, processing and making decisions. I expected emotional intensity. I didn't expect the heartache. I didn't know that my hormones would be so out of whack, you know, because grief really does affect all systems. And it's such a surprise. I was also used to kind of being the A player at work and being perceived as somebody who had it all together. And that was important to me. And wow, you really can't do that when, you know, your whole world just feels like it's just blown up. So, and Hugo and I worked together. So that was an interesting dynamic too, where when I eventually did go back to work, you know, all the people knew him and knew me. And so, you know, that was a little bit different, but yeah, and then you don't know what's normal. And what's normal for your kids? And what are you supposed to be doing? And you have all of these ideas about how people should handle grief when maybe that isn't going to be how they will handle it. You know, so if I'm a talker, do I think my kids need to be talking about it with someone? Well, maybe they don't. But yeah, so many surprises.
And then no one around you understands anything about grief either. So the people, your colleagues, your even friends and family members don't necessarily understand what you're going through. So at least for me, it felt so isolating. I felt so alone in all of it. Like who could I even talk to about this, or where do you even go for support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even had trouble. I remember just the word widow I couldn't relate to, because in my mind, widow meant people my grandmother's age, and I was 40. So I didn't have anyone in my social circle who had lost a spouse, and I didn't have anyone who I perceived had been through what I was going through. And I didn't even relate to the idea, because in my mind it had something to do with age, which is odd, but that's how I experienced it.
Actually, I think that's how most people would probably perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
And even other people would not use the word to describe you either,
Mm-hmm.
because in their
Yeah.
own minds that doesn't fit together. And I've had some people talk to me about trying to go to a bereavement support group in their community for widows who, in fact, most of whom were much older, and it felt so out of place. Like it isn't quite the same experience. Not again that it isn't devastating for anyone at any age, but it is a different experience when your children are young and still at home, and you're managing the household for them and being the breadwinner and trying to go show up at work every day and just keep your life together.
Yeah, all of those things for sure.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know if you have any tips that you would share with others who might be in this circumstance right now, other widows out there who are also mothers, and what they're going through.
Yeah. I think some of what I wish people understood that I think would be helpful is some of the common myths about grief. For me, I had never heard of anything but the five stages. So that was really the only lens that I had. And so I knew it wasn't going to be completely formulaic, but I really did expect that there was some sort of end to it. And so I think just even to understand that not only is it not formulaic, but it also doesn't end. There, acceptance is not some place. If grief is the natural response to a perceived loss, then we're always going to have a response because we can't undo the loss. So it's going to change over time, but it's not over. I wish I had understood that time doesn't heal. I wish I had understood that time is important, that the brain has to do a lot of learning in grief, especially when it comes to spousal loss or a bereavement that is particularly close, that it's such a wonderful thing that we have a human brain that it can, with relative certainty, predict where our loved ones are and when we're going to see them again so that we don't have to constantly be worried about it. But it's also a really odd experience to intellectually understand that someone died, meanwhile, to notice your brain still continuing to search for them in ways that kind of make you feel crazy. So I wish I had known that that's a very normal and natural thing. I wish I had known that counterfactual thinking was normal, because my brain kept replaying, I should have pulled up further on the highway and I should have done it differently at the hospital, and all the things that I woulda, coulda, shoulda done that would have resulted in him not dying. Instead of trying to talk myself out of those thoughts, I wish I had known that I could just notice that, yes, counterfactual thoughts happen in grief, and it's not something that I really ever have to solve. I wish I had known the dual process model of grief. And that, I think, is such a generous model. I like it because, it's gentle. It doesn't require that we actually do anything. It kind of gives us permission to live and grieve and live, and to not worry so much. Have you covered that, the dual process model? Should we explain it briefly?
It's come up before, but let's explain it for everyone.
Okay. So just the idea is that if you take all of the things that you do in grief, so thinking about the loss, feeling the loss, dealing with the logistics of the loss, right? That would be what we would put in a bucket called loss-oriented activities. And then everything else, so taking a break, hobbies, laughing, time away from thinking about it, would be what we would call restorative. And those are the only two buckets. So you're either in the loss-oriented bucket or you're in the restorative bucket. And the dual process model teaches that healing is found in the intentional back and forth between the two buckets. And what I like about that is, for someone like me who is inclined to try to get the A in everything, right? Or at least I used to be, I would judge myself when I was in the restorative bucket. Oh, I'm not thinking about it. I'm laughing. I'm not feeling about it. I must be doing it wrong, right? Had I had that model, I would have known, no, that's healthy. We go back and forth. And then for other people, I see it the opposite, where they might be inclined to avoid it, avoid the thinking about it and feeling about it, and just only spend time in the restoration. And this might give them permission to, kind of go back and forth. And so it becomes less about, I need to feel angry and I need to bargain and depress and all these things that the, five stages offers to us. And it becomes more about, okay, I'm going to think about it and feel about it and deal with it. And then also I'm going to give myself permission to take some breaks and zone out and maybe binge on Netflix or go out with a friend. And I'm not going to judge myself when I laugh. And then of course it's going to come back up and I'm going to have to deal with it and think about it again. And just, we don't have to take it so seriously and everything fits in somewhere. I wish I had known that too.
Mm.
So those are some of the things.
I love that model, and because it allows us, as you said, to kind of hold both buckets and to recognize we carry both of them with us. But it almost, in thinking about it, it almost seems like the natural way that children grieve as well, because I remember observing how easily children kind of move into that kind of restorative phase of playing together and laughing and having fun, and still they process their emotions at another time or later, but they seem to more naturally go back and forth, whereas we're constantly overthinking it and analyzing and judging ourselves.
We have this idea that there's a right or a wrong way to do it, some way we should be doing it or some way we shouldn't be doing it, and I don't think most kids have that at all.
No. In fact, I found it kind of instructive to watch children going through the grief process and comparing what was happening for me and how much self-judgment I had, even self-blame, guilt, all kinds of negative emotions toward myself for the way I was grieving. And part of it, I think, does come from a lack of experience, lack of knowledge, lack of role models in society, of other people who have grieved that we could actually learn from or ask questions from.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have any close examples in my world either. And then, of course, if you have any sort of, as I did, and it sounds like you did too, any sort of judgment or guilt or, you know, discomfort around it, you don't want to go talking about it. Right. So then you keep it even closer. That's why I love getting people into community. Because somebody can be honest about what's going on for them, and then it just normalizes it for the whole group. And all of a sudden, everyone in the group now sees, oh, it's not just me, you know, like this is normal and natural in grief.
That's so powerful. All the defensive walls come down once you have that recognition of commonality. Yeah. And again, I think maybe because our society has been so avoidant of grief, we're just not used to having conversations like this. And you and I were just saying how this conversation we're having, we hope, is important because someone else will hear it. And maybe it will help them get past the defensive walls that they're carrying to protect their grief.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in your work, just tell me about that. You creating community spaces or bringing people together in community, is that part of what you offer in your practice?
Yeah, my main program, I have a couple. I have one that's designed for early grief. And then I have kind of my main flagship program, which is called Mom Goes On. And it's really for people who they're past the intense parts of early grief, and they would describe themselves as back to functioning and going through the motions of adulting. But they don't feel as good as people keep telling them that they look. and they don't really know what life is going to look like now. I call it a grief plateau, where it's like, yeah, I'm doing okay, but I don't really perceive that I can love my life again. I don't really know how to get there, but I really want to. I don't want this to define, you know, my life going forward. And also it feels wrong to be happy again, or I can't imagine how I really truly could be. So those are the women that I work with. And I used to only do a one-on-one practice. And what I started noticing is that I kept having the same conversations over and over and over. And I would notice that my clients would struggle to believe me because they would be so intent upon blaming themselves for something or their experience or making themselves wrong that it was hard for me to help them see that it was normal. And so eventually I decided, okay, we're going to do this in a community. You know, that was 2019, and I've been running the same program ever since. And so it's just women who have lost their spouse and they identify as mothers. They might have grown kids, they might have little kids. It's all ages. It's not really about age. But yeah, we get together and we talk about grief and we talk about what holds us back from what we want next. And, you know, I put them through a curriculum that addresses the major problems and issues that most widows seem to experience. And it's magical. It's magical. It's so magical. even to watch someone who's on a call who isn't getting supported, just benefit from listening to someone else who is getting supported. And it's not people who want to play the, you know, widow card and be woe is me miserable. These are women who they ache to live. They want to live. That is why they are there. And they just don't exactly know how to do that in a way that feels good to them.
That tells me how hungry we are in a way in our society for community experiences, especially community-based grief, just conversations, rituals, coming together and convening around grief. And that's something that maybe we haven't had for a long time in our society. And it's getting worse because we're all spending time on our phones, on social media, and we're connecting in that way, but we're just not coming together in this shared intimacy and deep conversations that we need to be having.
Yeah. I started doing an event that's only for people who have done my main coaching program, but it's called Coaching on the Couch. And about twice a year, I'll invite 10, 11 women to my house. And wow, you can really see the desire to be with and connect with other humans. Then they'll come in, go out to dinner on a Friday night, you know, meet each other in real life. They've already been meeting on Zoom, you know, but to go out and to just be in an environment where you don't have to explain your circumstance. You can make a widow joke, you know, and people get it. And you don't have to explain it it's so powerful. And then we coach all day and then, you know, they go home, but it's lifelong friends. They'll go out, they go on cruises together. A couple of them, one of my current members lives in Puerto Rico, and several of them are intentionally going to visit her over Valentine's Day as a vacation for them, but also so that they can be in community together because they know Valentine's Day will be hard.
Yeah. Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's so cool.
So cool.
I just love that.
So cool.
That's really one thing. I know that I have a lot of death doulas and hospice workers who listen to this podcast, and I feel like we can't emphasize enough the power of bringing people together who are going through these situations, and of hosting group events and just creating somehow the container where people can share with one another.
Yeah. Yeah. It really surpassed what I thought it could be.
Yeah.
When I watched them connect.
Yeah. That is so powerful. And I was going to say, I noticed in reading some things on your website, along with dual process model, you talk about post-traumatic growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another really important concept when we look at grief. So would you explain that to the audience and what that term means?
Yeah, I remember hearing post-traumatic growth and being like kind of like a record scratch. Like, what? What'd they just say? But, you know, because I remember, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, everybody seems to know. But post-traumatic growth, it's actually been around for a long time. It was a phrase that was coined in the mid-90s by a couple of researchers. And before their work, what they thought was that when somebody went through something that we called traumatic, which at that point we use a different definition of trauma. It was more like, here's this objective list of, you know, things that could be considered traumatic, as opposed to it's highly subjective and based on, you know, the individual. But you go through something and you have two options. Either your wellness level will dip down and never come back, right? Or it will dip down and it maybe will bounce back to where it was before the traumatic event happened. That's what they thought. And then what they noticed as they were studying people is that actually there's a third option, which is that you bounce down, but then you bounce forward. So people would go through something that was traumatic and then report greater levels of life satisfaction, and not in spite of what had happened, but actually because of what had happened. Not that they were grateful that it happened necessarily. That's not it. But that because it happened, they used it in a way that informed how they live now, so that how they live now is even more aligned with who they want to be and what they value. It's like a wake-up call.
That is such powerful teaching that, again, is largely missing in our society, even the mindset, even the possibility out there that I'm going through something really hard right now, but there is a possibility I could grow and change in a way down the road. Maybe I can't see it. I don't know what it is, but just to have the hope that there could be something better or something different.
Mm-hmm. And doing it in a way that doesn't imply that growth is morally superior. Because that's what I see too, is that even when we are talking about it, people end up receiving it as something else that they should do. Oh, well, now I should grow from my grief. Well, no, thank you. Right. As opposed to, okay, you know, I live in Kansas. My house got knocked over by a tornado. I'm gonna need another house. I could give the builder the original plans for my old house and we could try to rebuild that house, and that's fine. And also, I've lived in this house for a while, so I could update the design of my house, right? I could put more windows in, I could add more outlets, I could do something different with my house. Neither would it wouldn't one wouldn't be morally superior than the other, but I do get some agency in the matter, right? I do get to decide what I want to make of what I've been through. And that's the approach that when we do talk about it, I wish we talked about it with.
That's so true. And also maybe depending on where you are in your grieving, because for someone going through the really acute early stages of grief, it's way too soon to even think of that concept.
So it agreed. Just it's kind seems of repulsive.
Like, yeah. It would be nice if societally we had this mindset that something could change down the road. I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready to focus on that. That's not for me to work toward or even think about right now. But if at least we had examples and that image in mind, it seems like that could be helpful to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not just for, you know, bereavement, right? It's like truly anything we go through as humans, we get to decide who we want to be and what we want to make of it. And maybe at a certain point, what we really want is just to flail and be upset and you know, sad that we lost something that we wanted. Valid.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to say that's not a valid choice.
Yeah.
and particularly in the beginning stages, maybe even forever. I mean, that is a choice people can make.
Yes.
But to also have in mind, have an awareness that there is a different path eventually that we could be on.
Yeah.
I just think that's hopeful.
100%. And it's really fun to watch people go and watch that light bulb turn on. Oh, I get to decide what I want to make of this.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You bring that up with, the story about the house being knocked down, because I'm living in Southern California, where just a year ago we had the devastating fires. So many people displaced from their homes, including my own son and his family lost their home in one of the fires. And so just watching the process of how you cope with that amount of loss, with the tragedy of it, the irrationality of it, the fact that it just doesn't make any sense. How could this even happen? And how do you go on and carry on with life and start to put things back together again?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you're right. This applies to any type of loss that we experience or trauma that we experience. The potential for growth is there. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen necessarily or that we should pursue that, only that it's there.
And sometimes it happens in ways you might not even notice. And if you go back and look for it, you'll find it. You know, it may not have been intentional growth that you set out to create. And yet you look back and go, oh, wow, I see it.
Yeah, that's such a good point to make. And then I know that you have host a podcast as well. So tell me about your podcast.
Yeah, it's called The Widowed Mom Podcast. So it's a little niche, but I just like having conversations about what is helpful in grief. And so it's, I think we're up to 350 episodes at this point in time.
Wow.
One comes out every week, and I've been doing it for years. And so sometimes it's, you know, talking to clients, sometimes it's sharing tools, helping people, you know, just giving them what I wish I would have had, essentially, what I'm learning as I coach.
And it's interesting how even a podcast in a sense could be a type of community, or the, you know, to know, just knowing and hearing other people talk about their stories and recognizing it's not just me, other people.
Yeah. That's my favorite. That's the best feedback I ever get, is when I find out that a woman found it really, it's my favorite when I find out she found it early in grief at a point where she couldn't talk to anybody else, or she perceived herself to be really alone, and to be able to just push play on a free resource and have it in your ear and feel that connection, and hear stories from other women who, you know, maybe have similar life circumstances. Just the idea that I don't have to know how I'm going to figure this out to believe that it's possible for me to figure this out, because if she's done it, you know, if that woman's done it, then maybe I'm less alone and maybe I can do it. And that's just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And podcasting, it's such an interesting, unique medium in a way that for listeners can be totally anonymous and safe and in their own world. We have any idea who they are, who's actually listening or why.
Yeah.
And so they're fully protected. It's a safe container. And then, but those of us who are fortunate enough to be the hosts and to also have guests on our podcast, we get the experience of these conversations. I mean, there's not a conversation that goes by that I don't feel enlightened by or changed by or informed, like, oh, wow, I never thought of that. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so we're creating connections that are going to ripple out to lots of other people, but they're real connections that we're experiencing right now.
You know, the other thing I love about it is, the more I see it, is it'll be the mom listening primarily, but either she's sharing or role modeling something with her child, or sometimes the child is listening, right? And the ripple of that is so cool. I had a client tell me a story one time about how her child, she was helping him find a way to process his feelings. And she overheard her child telling another child on the phone, like a student friend of theirs, teaching them how to do the same thing. And that to me is just like the magic of the internet, that I can get behind a microphone, record something, somebody else hears it, tells their kid, somebody's kid tells another kid. What?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, that's amazing. I know. Well, just podcasting note, I got a message from a young man who said to me, one of his good friends had died, who lived across the country or was dying. And he was driving across the country to go see his friend and wanted to get there to say goodbye to him before he died, and discovered the podcast and listen to the archives and all these episodes all the way across the country as he was driving there. He said he started out terrified. I don't know what to say to my friend. I don't know how to be there. I'm afraid to even walk into the hospital room. This is also scary for me. But he said, I listened to all these podcasts and all these conversations that you had. And by the time I got there, I wasn't afraid anymore. I knew what to say. I knew how to go in and just sit and be present and be with my friend. And it was like, wow, that's the whole reason that we're even doing this or having this conversation.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm so admiring of you.
You're not supposed to make me cry. I'm coming to the podcast, Karen. It's a good story. I like it.
I'm admiring of you. I mean, for being able to bring your pain directly into this medium and sharing that, because you're obviously sharing your own life lessons and everything that you've been through. And that takes a lot of vulnerability and authenticity as well.
Yeah, it does. And you know, I think the more I do it, the more I kind of even forget that it does take that. But when I go back and I remember what it was like to really think that the point of life was to be happy, and that if you were sad, you were doing something wrong, and what it's like to go into grief with that paradigm of like, get yourself back to happy as quickly as you can. What? You know, I see it so differently now. What an easier experience of grief more people would have if they also didn't believe they weren't supposed to feel normal, natural human emotions that are valuable and are the quality of our lives, right?
Yeah. So very true. I remember, well, my dad died when I was in my early 30s and I had two young children. I remember every day I would wake up and think, someday I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel just like I did before he died. And every day I was just waiting and hoping to go backwards, back in time to become the me I was before he died. And it took 3 years before I woke up one day and I thought, wait a minute, this was this major catastrophic event in your life. It's meant to change everything. It's supposed to change. Yeah. And then I realized, I'm never going to go backwards. I won't be who I was before. I have to let myself be who I am now and allow myself to change. That flipped everything. That one realization made me realize it's okay to change and it's okay to let this change me. It's okay to let go of who I was before and recognize this isn't a life-altering experience. And everything will
That's
be
beautiful.
different for me from now on, but that's okay. I don't have to try to make it be what it was before.
I was, just knowing that you're saying that, right? I don't know how you said it took you a long time to come to that conclusion, but now just to offer it to someone else, they don't have to wait so long to come to that conclusion is such a gift.
To allow the change to happen and don't feel bad that it's changing you, but somehow I felt it in my maybe what little I knew about grief that that's was what it was. It's like you're temporarily in a state of grief, but it goes away and doesn't affect you or change you.
Yeah. It's a nice idea if you have also bought into the point of life is to be happy all the time, but it's not how it
That's
actually works.
exactly.
Nor would
And
we want it really. I would never, I mean, I'm to a place Hugo will be gone 10 years in August, and I'm to a place where, the sadness is so much less, but also I wouldn't want to not feel sad. Like it would feel, I like it. I like the love that we had. I like the ache of it. I like the nostalgia. I like, so I don't want to just only think about the happy things.
Exactly. It's like the full tapestry. You need all the colors blended in, some colors that aren't your favorite colors, but the other thing I think about, it's if we didn't have darkness, we wouldn't appreciate light for what it is. And how would we even enjoy the good times or know what that joy and pleasure is if we didn't also experience
100%.
sadness and pain? Yeah, and I think that's just another message that people in our society, our contemporary society right now, may not hear or learn very well, that if you're spending your time trying to never feel pain and never feel sadness, you're wasting a huge amount of energy for something that isn't meant to
Yeah,
be.
I think you're so right. I think you also limit the amount of good stuff that you get to feel when you avoid the stuff that you don't want to feel. I for sure see that because you'll stop it in effort to avoid more disappointment. You'll not put yourself out there or be vulnerable or, go after experiences or connections that you want. So you don't get the highs in effort to block yourself from the lows. But I also, this is why I spend so much time on feelings tools with my clients, is because of course, if nobody ever taught us how to handle the big feelings that are undesirable, why would we have any confidence? Why would we, believe that we could? Well, of course we would want to avoid them. So it makes sense. And also teaching people how to feel feelings and how to regulate their nervous systems ought to be required in elementary school.
So true, so true. And I don't know how old your children were
12 and 9.
when your husband died, but are there, I mean, I feel like all of us need to be doing grief education with our own children. This kind of emotional intelligence needs to include grief and how you handle loss and how we deal with it when we're sad and things happen and that it's a normal part of life. But I don't know, are there things you learned with your own children that might be helpful to others?
Well, my children had very different responses for sure. So that's one thing I think that's valuable to learn is just a good reminder that grief is so unique and it's unique for each person. And it may be, we might be grieving the same person, but we all had a different relationship with that person. So who he was to me was not who he was to my daughter, and that was not who he was to my son. And when we're all in different places, we all need, different approaches. So for my son, it was the first person that had ever died in his recollection, right? So it was also his just first realization that people you love can die. And so for him, he was extremely worried that I would die. And, my daughter didn't have that so much. She was more grieving the things she could imagine in the future that hadn't yet happened that she wanted to happen. Whereas for my son, it was really more of like I feel unsafe. If mommy, if you die, I want to die 2 seconds before you do, so I don't have to be without you, kind of thing. And they both just handled it very differently. My daughter was much more aware of her own emotions. My son was much more aware of mine, and constantly worried about me and trying to fix me. And mommy, you seem sad. How do I make you happy? So there are a lot of conversations about, buddy, it's okay for mommy to be sad. It's sad. Sad isn't a problem. And also, mommy's emotions are mommy's. And there's, you can, you've got you, and I've got me, and you can't make me feel anything. So please don't take that responsibility on. Definitely learn those things. And then everybody just has their own timeline in their own way.
And that's such a good point with children. Not only was they have their own unique relationship, but they're at different developmental stages,
Very
and the
much.
grief probably keeps returning each time they enter a new stage or a new phase of life. They may reprocess the grief in a new way because they're capable of more thought and more processing and more emotional processing as well.
Yeah, I also wish that I had had the secondary loss language to kind of normalize some things for them and for me too. And I think and I wish I had had that because you understand the primary loss. That's quite obvious, but it can feel, you feel unprepared when the secondary losses catch you off guard. And I would love for people to be able to talk about what those secondary losses might be. At least get to the point where you can, when one happens, name it and label it and not believe the lie that because it feels like a fresh loss to you, that somehow you've regressed or that you missed something or you didn't do something right in grief. Like, no, of course, this is just a new aspect of that I hadn't experienced. And now here it is. And, of course, this it feels like a fresh loss because it wouldn't have happened if he were here,
And that's interesting, the secondary loss that can come after the grief event. I mean, like later in time, there's also anticipatory loss in some cases when you know someone is dying. So it's such a long spectrum in a way, a long arc of loss and grief because the grief can begin before the loss occurs, and it goes on and on after the loss as well.
And it's also probably not the only loss we're the only thing that we're experiencing loss around. We're constantly experiencing grief around one thing or another, and that can be a little bit complicated too. And sometimes there's not much time between, which makes it even harder. It just feels like you're just being kind of knocked over perpetually.
Yeah, so true. That's one thing for me at my age. I'm a lot older than you are, but looking ahead, I'm aware that for the rest of my life, there's going to be some cumulative grief going on because friends, family members, the people I know that are aging, there's going to be illness and loss and death, and I have to become resilient and learn how am I going to carry the grief that's coming my way. But oftentimes, life has prepared us for that too, because we've already been through these experiences. And I guess I would say it's post-traumatic growth has been helpful there too, going through the whole process, seeing how things have grown and changed helps me with the anticipation of grief that's coming in the future and knowing I can deal with it. I'll be
You
able to
perceive
handle it.
yourself
Right.
as more resilient, more capable. Yeah, totally.
For sure.
It's always helped me to just remind myself that, the bottom line is if I can stay with myself and I'm willing to feel whatever it is that I'm feeling, that is the bulk of it. Not an easy thing to do, and it's a continuous practice that you kind of keep coming back to, but it does tend to alleviate any anxiety about future grief for me. It's like, oh, okay, that's just worry about emotions in the future. If I can just come back and remind myself that I'm pretty good at feelings. I can let emotions flow through me. So if I can do it now, I can do it then.
'Cause in reality, in a way, we're wired for it. We're wired to experience loss and change and to go through grief. That's kind of part of our makeup as humans. We just may be new to it. We just may not have experienced it very much. We don't know yet what that terrain looks like.
Or and I know a lot of clients that I work with not only haven't experienced it, but have almost been actively sheltered from experiencing it, right? Where families don't talk about loss. They like shut it down and pretend it didn't happen or move on really quickly, you know? And so not only have they not been taught how to do it, but they're used to doing it in a way that actually makes it so much harder on them. I see that a lot too.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. I've had a lot of adults tell me, they had grandparents die when they were young, but no one talked to them. They didn't go to the funeral. They had no experience with that actual loss and no one to guide them through it. And so those were such missed opportunities when they might have learned some of the resilience they could use later on.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, there's so much that is needed in our society right now. And I guess each one of us, we're just trying to do what we can in our own little worlds to help other people. But definitely talking about grief, our own experiences, what we've witnessed for others, and what we're doing to try to help others, I think there's huge value in that. And so I wanted to ask, you're still doing one-on-one work with people as well?
Actually, I don't really. I just do it in groups.
In groups. Okay.
Yeah.
And so tell me about how someone might become part of one of your groups.
Oh, sure. Yeah. For Mom Goes On, it is, again, it's designed for women who feel like they're back to functioning, right? So I have an application that people fill out and it points them toward the right program. So as long as they are able to, you know, read and retain, can you watch a short video and fill out a reflection worksheet? You know, if that's too much for you, we wouldn't want to put you in Mom Goes On. You wouldn't be ready for it. If that's the case, then I have another program called Grief Essentials, which is a much shorter 8-week program just designed to get people accurate information, widows, accurate information about grief, you know, kind of get their feet under them, really good for the acute grief. And then Mom Goes On is 6 months long and much more in depth. And we're really diving into, you know, what's going on in there. Are you having confidence issues? Are you trusting yourself? Are some of your relationships feeling complicated? What's going on with your parenting? What's your relationship like with your person's belongings? Does that need, you know, attention? How are you feeling about your vision for the future and what you perceive is available to you? And, you know, some of those just kinds of identity things and things that require a little bit more substance. But we're always doing it. The way I do it is it's a rolling cohort, which I absolutely love for a group program because I have, you know, at any given point in time, about 100 women in a group who are in various places, but are so good for each other. So every month we bring in a new small cohort and we fold them into the existing cohort. And when women do the initial 6-month program, many of them will stay on and do what we call Mom Goes On Masters. They'll do another 6 months. And then some of them will keep going forever. I've got some that they identify as lifers and they've been with me since literally 2019. And it's not because they are held back in their grief or overly identifying with the label of widow. It's because they have fallen in love with the community. They have fallen in love with encouraging and supporting others. You know, they're continuing to grow and get something out of it. And it's just a beautiful, amazing thing. And I'm just so enthralled by the fact that we can do this stuff online. Like I have women that live in all over, you know, mostly America and Canada, the United States and Canada, but also Europe and Australia and, you know, all these different places that they can just come in and get in on Zoom and here we go.
I love that you have the rolling cohort, as you were saying, so that there are women at every possible stage dealing with grief because it is such good role modeling and to be able to hear from women who are dealing with different aspects of this entire process.
Yeah. And they'll request support on different topics. So in early grief, most people are not asking me to talk about dating, you know, but then later, maybe they are, maybe they're getting remarried and now they're trying to figure out the role of their person in their marriage or, you know, how did they navigate some of these things that are how they blend a family or things like that. And so there's this whole spectrum of things that they might be dealing with. And then there's all of the different life experiences and the different ages and the different, you know, just unique things that make it interesting. And yeah, I just couldn't be more in love with it. And we also offer scholarships. So it's, you know, some people are not going to be in the same financial position as others. So we usually have 2 scholarship spots every month. And That's available too. And then I do free public coaching calls too once a month, just like 30-minute answer people's questions and coach them because I know some people are never going to come into the program at all.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, so it seems like for anyone curious, maybe start with the podcast. Start listening
Heck
to your
yeah.
podcast and then come
Listen
on
to the podcast for
the
sure. I mean, gosh, there's so many episodes. You could listen to that podcast forever. Yeah.
Start there, listen to the free monthly calls and then see if it feels right to become
Yeah.
part of the group. But I just think there's no substitute for that community coming together.
I do too. And I also think that if my community's not right for people, go, don't give up on finding the community that's right for you. Because maybe, mine's secular. Maybe people want something that's faith-based. That's out there. Maybe people want something that's in person. That's out there. Maybe people want something that's only specific to, suicide loss. That's out there. You just got to keep going until you find, your people. And they are out there. You just have to not quit until you find them.
Yeah, so true. And I just want to say it again, what I was saying at the beginning, for anyone doing this end of life work or grief and bereavement work, remember the value of bringing people together. If you can add it to the work you're already doing, if you can find a format or a way to bring people together in community, I think that's one of the game changers for all of this is bringing everyone together so they can share their stories.
Yeah, and it has to be done. This is what I have found. It has to be done in a very intentional way because a lot of people are very shy about groups. They're afraid that the group will drag them down. They don't want to be in a group that just talks about the sad story and repeatedly tells it over and over. And so I think you want to just give care to how you cultivate the culture that you're trying to create in the group and what is okay and what's not okay. Like, we don't ever tell anyone what to do, ever. I don't give advice, right? I believe my people have wisdom inside of them and I can help them get to it, but I don't know what's best for them, and nor do I want to put myself in a container where other people are telling me what to do. And I think that's really important too, is what are the norms of the group that you're creating and how do people come together with different values and support the unique visions that everyone has for their lives, knowing that it's going to be different than the person next to you.
Yeah, that you're right. That's so important. The fact, the how well facilitated the group is and the intention you set when you convene people and bring them together and the kind of the guidance that you provide is really important as well. Well, Krista, I'm just really excited about what you're doing and to learn about it. And like you said, how did we not hear of each other before now? But I'm so glad
I
that we did, because we've both been
Same.
around for a little while at least
Yeah.
doing work like this. So I'll remind everyone I'm talking with Krista St. Germain. Her website is coachingwithkrista.com. And I definitely hope you'll check out her podcast, the Widowed Mom podcast, and go to her website to learn more about what she's offering. And I want to thank you so much, Krista, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Karen. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation, and I really
I hope we'll
enjoyed
keep in
talking
touch.
with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Krista St. Germain and that you'll check out her podcast, which is The Widowed Mom, if that's something that you think would be helpful to you or recommend it to other people. I was especially interested in talking with Krista about, first of all, the dual process model of grief and also post-traumatic growth and her experiences and perceptions about that. And then, thirdly, talking with her about grief literacy for children as part of emotional intelligence. I've been having this conversation with a lot of guests recently about how important it is for those of us who are parents and grandparents to make sure we are sharing these conversations with our children in an age-appropriate way, but to make sure we are exposing them to death and dying and having conversations about grief, because even I will say my 3-year-old granddaughter expresses thoughts of grief at times and the emotion of grief. And I think it's important that we give it a name and that we help our little ones process their own sadness, their own feeling of loss when it comes up at times, because that's how we will grow adults who are far better at carrying their own grief and managing it if we start in childhood. And so I'll keep emphasizing that throughout the year. It's come up already a few times in interviews, some that have aired already, some that are going to air in the near future. So that's something that is on my mind lately, probably because I have been living with my grandchildren for the past 5 months. So I'm really well aware of the realm of a three-year-old and what she thinks about and what her emotions are bringing up for her. So thanks for joining me today and for listening all the way through to this point. I really appreciate your support. Remember to subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen. And also please share the podcast with others who might benefit from being part of our audience and this little community that we're creating here. And I'll come back in 2 weeks with another interview for you. Until then, remember, we're here for love. And that means we're also here for grief. They go hand in hand. And in a sense, if we're teaching children about love, we are also exposing them to grief, and they need grief education as well. So face your fear of talking about death and dying and facing it. Be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment that you have a chance to be here on planet Earth. Bye-bye.